Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist John M. McKenna are back to rewind episode 5 of Survivor 50. I'm excited to talk about this episode. We got some different topics to talk about and some fun ones that I want to, you know, dive into. And we see two crazy boots with Charlie and Angelina, some preseason favorites for most. I mean, that's the way it kind of goes with season 50 when like everybody is awesome. Let's get into it.
Yeah, this is such an interesting episode, McKenna, because I think now that we know for a fact we are out of the pre-merge officially, kind of. Next week still seems dubious and is probably like it's officially the merge, but like,
but it's Survivor where it does like the we're gonna break everybody up into random quote unquote groups and you're gonna go to tribal council. And it's like, but why not just have a tribe swap?
To be fair, I don't think we need a 17 person merge, so it's fine. I'm fine with that. We don't need a 17 person.
I would have liked the normal tribe swap,
but I don't think any of us could have figured this is where we would be at the end of the post-merge for Survivor 50. Mostly, not just because it's so early and the thought of a 17-person merge is absolutely insane, but I don't think anyone really thought we'd be getting to this point with only one double tribal council so far in the first 5 episodes. I even think based on like who's gone so far, I don't know how you're feeling about this boot order, McKenna, but it's been
started
fine
off
so
terrible.
Far. Yeah, well, of course you wanted Jenna as your winner. You had Jenna as your winner pick, but I like based on what these players are bringing on the island, and yeah, we still have some grossly edited people on the island, but based on what we've been seeing, like I'm not terribly offended by the boot order so far. Kind of wish like Q had stuck around longer because I just think Q's hilarious. But and obviously like I wish we had more Angelina and we had more from Angelina. I think Mike White is a fantastic person to see, but like also coming into 50, like we knew we'd be losing someone we like every single week.
Yeah.
And I'm not feeling bad that these are the 6 people or 7 people we've lost in these first 5 episodes.
Yeah, there's definitely oh, I wish I saw more of X's game. You're always gonna say that. Or if something just happened, this wouldn't have been the boot. Or, So, I'm still loving season 50 despite some of its shortcomings. Because, you know, there are many, but I like to look on the positive side of things, I think, in general. So we ready to dive into our topics today, John?
Yeah, I think so, because I think our topics are really relevant. And I think when we're, I mean, obviously I think it is because we decided those topics. But more importantly, I think when we're looking at the way this last I really liked how this episode was edited, because we saw this Vatu tribe go to a third straight tribal council. And because of that, it's so nice that they didn't spend a lot of time on Vatu this week and that we got to see this Sela tribe.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Sela. We haven't heard much from Kahlo. So it is nice to, you know, get some more from these tribes for sure. And in some of our examples here, we definitely do, you know, dive into some of these tribes, but we're going to stick on Vatu for a little bit here. And this is bartering your advantage for trust in the game. So we see here Christian and Ozzy dealing with that this episode, where Ozzy's like, I need to know how to trust you after last tribal council. So you need to, you know, give a little bit to me and put some trust in me that I'm not going to, you know, blindside you or backstab you by giving me your shot in the dark. And I think if this were to come from anybody besides Ozzy, I think Christian would have been a little bit more receptive, because Ozzy has come, he had the blow up at the fire. He's had in previous seasons where he's been very direct and aggressive and like coming at Christian of like, you need to give me your shot in the dark. Kind of put him on the back foot of like maybe not wanting to freely give it. But I think this was the correct move for him to further himself a little bit in the game.
I think what it comes down to is what we really saw in this episode was like a return of South Pacific Ozzy, right?
This idea
of like someone who's like leading. And obviously we get that direct comparison with the response Cochran. To Christian and Cochran and things like that. But I think it's also just his positioning in the tribe. He feels like he should have a little more control, where I feel he doesn't have much control on this Vatu tribe. I think this tribe is really kind of at Emily's whim, if anyone's. By the sounds of it, Emily is the person who, if you listen to Angelina's exit press, she said that like it's kind of weird Emily didn't get a little more attention in the edit, because it was Emily who convinced her that the plan was Stephanie, and that Emily is just like really good at lying. And it's kind of making people just like rethink how Emily has been represented in the last couple of episodes, where we have her giving this information about the idol that Christian told her about, right? And I think a casual viewer watching that is like, oh my God, Emily, why are you like so loose-lipped? Why are you just explaining all these things to everyone? Especially because we've seen her do it in a couple episodes now. But I think there might be a little more method to the madness that is Emily Flippin.
We have here that Angelina was saying she was trying to get Ozzy to flip, but he wouldn't flip on Christian and Emily. And this might have been at the point where Christian gave him a shot in the dark and is just like, all right, he does trust me. He does feel good with me to a certain extent. Because obviously, you know, we see the Ozzy and Christian war incoming. Yeah. Because that is definitely going to happen. But we also see this kind of bartering for advantages and trust in Game Changers with Suri and Sarah. Sarah actually offers it up to Suri, the steal a vote to Suri, to be like, all right, you know what? I want to show you that I trust you. I'm going to offer up my advantage for you to hold on to after this tribal council. So, you know, I'm not coming for you. Like nothing's going on with our relationship. We're solid.
Yeah. I think when we really look at this, it's not quite the same, because Sarah is in such a strong position in Game Changer. She has her alliance with Brad and Troy's end there. It's just the idea of keeping Ceree close mm-hmm. as someone who you don't want flipping on you and everything. Give her this steal a vote, which she, this is the steal a vote she got from the challenge that Michaela could have gotten and then yeah. missed under the bench.
Right.
But this was a real big moment of trust, like showing it to, or giving it to Ceree. Ceree unfortunately didn't read the fine print on it and then goes to attempt to play it right. and kind of breaks that trust there. Whereas with Ozzy asking for the Shot of the Dark, and I think this is one of the fascinating things about the Shot of the Dark in general, right? Mm-hmm. Where, what's the value of the Shot in the Dark? I think that's the big question you have to assess here.
You have to weigh the value of the Shot in the Dark versus the value of your vote. So that's mm-hmm. where the equation, so to speak, lies.
And I think a lot of the times your vote is much more important, especially in this instance where it was five people voting, right? Mm-hmm. Your vote could determine who goes home and who doesn't go home when it's five people. I think if yeah. you get less than five, I think if you're at four people, which, like, thankfully we don't see many four people mm-hmm. tribal councils, I think that's when your Shot of the Dark kind of gets a little more valuable. Mm-hmm. But there, I think there's this sweet spot between like seven and five where your vote is actually like super mm-hmm. important. And that's why a steal a vote has this type of power in Game Changers, because it is that swing, right? It's a two-vote swing. We've talked about the steal a vote previously and on other podcasts, just how it is such a swing in power that it can really change things. And we see that when Ceree attempts to use that in there, it's to kind of like keep Sarah in line, because she wasn't sure how Sarah was actually going to vote at that vote.
Yeah, she was trying to keep Sarah safe, and like there was something amiss and she didn't trust Ty in all this whole big, you know, kerfuffle of everybody in there. And Ceree just wanted to make the plan, because she knew where everything was, what was going down with everything. And so she wanted to just use the steal a vote to keep Sarah safe and explain it all after, rather than, you know, use this sign of trust to then move forward in the game, because clearly it backfired on Ceree, because Michaela goes home there, one of Ceree's allies. So there's no way Ozzy could have, you know, used this against Christian mm-hmm. to try and backstab him, because he can't attempt to play the Shot in the Dark. Yeah. He can't attempt to do anything like that with this. So there's no way that Christian or Ozzy could have broken that trust back with Christian, unlike in this Game Changers episode where it has to be pointed out that this advantage is non-transferable. The owner of the advantage keeps it and can't give it to anybody else.
And that's what's so fascinating about the Shot in the Dark, too, because in case people don't know, and it's not really expressed ever, the Shot in the Dark is a non-transferable advantage, mm-hmm. right? Can we even call it an advantage if everyone has it? I think it has potential to be an advantage. However, it's a game mechanic that is non-transferable, right? So right. Christian giving Ozzy his Shot in the Dark just says, okay, Christian, you have to cast a vote this tribal council. Honestly, like, it could have backfired, because it's like, now you're saying Christian has to cast his vote and isn't maybe going to play this and not cast his vote. But there's no advantage in voting Christian out in that situation, mm-hmm. where it's not a situation like in 43 with the Knowledge is Power, right, where Jesse gets Dwight voted out so that he can hold on to Janine's idol and things like that, right? It's not the same as that situation. Instead, it's kind of just one where it's like, okay, you doing this is like a show of faith that you trust me enough not mm-hmm. to vote you out and not to use this to like mess up numbers. I think that's really where Ozzy's coming from in this situation, because there is no advantage to it, right? And it's interesting because I listened to Tyson's podcast this week. And a lot of the times people ask to hold things of yours mm-hmm. when, like, to show as a sign of trust, right?
Right.
And he was saying that Laura Moret had his pants with her when she was voted out, because he gave them to her as a way of being like, yeah, I'm totally not going to vote you out. Like, it's cold at night. Why would I do that? And then votes her out anyways, right? So there is that duplicity to it that you can do, where it's like, okay,
I'm probably going to vote anyway at tribal council.
Yeah.
Council's moving forward. So take my shot in the dark.
Yeah. It's fascinating to think of. And it's, again, this one of those weird things with Aussie on this season where this is feels like something that Aussie would never propose in a former season. Like, even if we are channeling like South Pacific Aussie here, this doesn't feel like an Aussie move to ask for someone's shot in the dark.
Because he's not an advantage guy. Like, he's an idol guy, but because he gets voted out with them. Like, he's not really, like, he doesn't really touch that side of the game. But what I love about season 50 and our self-imposed rules on this podcast, we couldn't talk about any new era moments while we were rewinding the 40s. But with season 50, we broke the chains and we are going to talk about some more new era moments. And I'm so excited we get to do so because now we have a direct relation to a shot in the dark transfer with Andy and Sierra in 45.
Seven.
Those two switched for me all the time.
To be fair, they are the two that most people talk about as the best two seasons of the new era. So I think they are kind of interchangeable in a lot.
And they're again, the numbers colors too. Yes. So it always messes.
And the numbers make it hard to discern things. Survivor, you've got some subtitles again, but yeah, it's so interesting because it's a very different situation when we see Andy giving up his shot in the dark to Sierra. Right, that is a situation. It's similar because there's still five people in the tribe, right? This is the point where Jonathan Lovett's been voted out already. So you're down to, well, can I remember this tribe? Rachel, Sierra, Sam, Andy, and Annika.
There you go. Cooking.
Yeah. I got it. And this is Andy really trying to solidify his alliance. He's kind of already built this trust with Sam, but Sam and Sierra are really close, and Sierra isn't quite won over with Andy. So he gives Andy... he gives Sierra. Andy gives Sierra. That's what I'm trying to say.
Man, we're struggling today. We're struggling. We went a little bit later. We're like, is it time for bed?
Andy gives Sierra his shot in the dark. Just as like a sign of trust. And again, there's not a lot of value in this. In fact, I don't even think Andy valued his shot in the dark all that much because he was losing his shot in the dark throughout this entire season.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this move by both of them because of what you were saying before. The shot in the dark can mean everything if you're Caleb, but it can mean nothing if you're Rachel.
Yeah.
So, like, the shot in the dark has its very specific moments where it's like, thank goodness I have this. But if you don't have it, then it's just like any normal survivor that you've watched before. And it gives you this freedom and this leverage to use throughout the game.
Yeah, I agree. And as I was saying earlier, right, the shot in the dark has this weird spot where it's not very helpful. And it's awkwardly the part where we have our starting tribes in the new era. It's more valuable as an actual advantage when there are more votes going around because your single vote isn't as powerful and it isn't swaying the vote as much. So that's why I think you see someone like Caleb's shot in the dark be so powerful there. And obviously it is because it hits too, right? And then when you look at like 48, where you have Mary's shot in the dark, where there's four, and it's so powerful because it like messes everything up. There was also a lost vote in that tribal council, so it's even more confusing. But that... this is that sweet spot where like the shot in the dark doesn't matter. And I think Andy appropriately gauges that in this situation. And it's just like the gesture of handing over something that could be a lifeline in the game to someone else really does help solidify trust. And it just helps that this is something that they get no benefit from actually holding on to other than preventing you from being able to play it. So there's no benefit for them to be like, okay, I have your advantage. Let me vote you out then now. So this is my advantage.
Sidebar, because this is actually an interesting conversation. If Vatu goes to tribal again and it wasn't merged, do you think they'd go to rocks? And then we have another comment of, they think that Ozzy is getting his torch snuffed, but I think it's Christian who goes. I think Emily flips over to Ozzy because they have a good working relationship. I don't think Emily wants to go to Rox.
It's an interesting question because how much do you weigh pregame relationships at that point? Is Emily voting out Christian here a bad thing for her game because of other relationships she might have on from Sela previously? I think Aussie's probably like a stronger connection for her. I think Stephanie's probably someone stronger to have in the game just because of her connections from old Vatu that are still left in the game.
Another comment of they think that Stephanie would get her torch snuff. So this honestly would be an interesting four to see go to Tribal Council because Stephanie is locked in with Aussie with the like the old school vibes and the challenge strength. Mm-hmm. Then the secret pair, I guess, of Emily and Ozzy being a tight duo, Emily and Christian are obvious. So it's like, which set of people wins?
I think what it comes down to is Emily's the safest person on that tribe, and it's not close. Which is wild based on the edit, because it makes it, because it seems like she's kind of the chaos on the tribe, but I don't think she is.
Yeah.
And I think she's just the safest person who has these connections with everyone. And sure, we haven't seen her have a connection with Stephanie as much, but I think she's still kind of the one who's dictating which of these three people would be going.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, we are going to go into our outplay, and we're going to talk about this relay challenge because I love this challenge, and I think Survivor should do more of this specific challenge of, okay, this person has to do this one task, which is different from this task, and this task, and it's only one person doing each, or in this case, like there were two swimmers to get two bags. But we do see this challenge repeat in so many seasons. Earliest one is being Marquesas Jungle Relay, but a lot of it is, all right, two people go out into the jungle, bring back puzzle pieces. Two people go out, bring another set. But there are a few that are pretty similar to this, but actually Jungle Relay, technically, even though it is in, it's called Quest for Fire, but it's also Jungle Relay as well in the opening of 50. 50 does it twice, which
actually, I would even argue it does it three times, because I could say there's an argument for the Snake Challenge being Jungle Relay.
That's true.
Right? And I think this is a format that Survivor seems to be going back to a lot. Mm-hmm. But it's nice because they're changing up the variations on it. We could arguably have had three instances of this challenge, but they've all felt distinctly different from each other.
Right.
I think this last one felt the most similar to that Quest for Fire in the premiere. But it's so nice to be able to use your players in these instances. Sure. Are all of these legs the same? No. Sri had to dump out bags. Like, she did it great. Had to
undo a lot. You know what? Sri is not the shining star of dumping out the bags. It is Tiffany.
It is Tiffany. Tiffany with her lasso technique to untie those bags. That was something to behold. But I think the big thing is, like, Survivor 50 is taking these challenges, and we talk about the redundancy in challenges a lot on this podcast, because we talk about challenges a lot on this podcast because McKenna loves challenges.
Yes, but I don't want to be like, all right, so let's talk about challenges where they throw things. Like, this is a specific, you know, challenge that we can relate to. And over on the Patreon, so please go watch episode 5 of Gabon. He's a snake, but he's my snake. Watch that so you can listen to us on tomorrow. But this challenge in Gabon is two people going out to get sections of a flagpole, but each time they have to go over every obstacle. So everyone has to go through the cargo net, but then the first one, it's, all right, you have one kind of small obstacle. Then the next one, you have to go over both obstacles and then go so on and so forth until everybody is done. And so I think this is a really neat iteration where it's progressive and you have to think, where do I put my people who are going to do the best? Obviously we have Maddie being the one who's going over everything. I figured it would be ace with him because of the powerhouses they were earlier in the reward challenge, but it was Ken, and they did a great job going through all of the challenges. They were so nimble and everything like that. So I think this iteration is also really cool, where it's just a progressive challenge.
I really like this iteration of Jungle Relay because it is just escalating, and you have players going out through one obstacle. Theoretically, you put your weakest players out, but who do you pair your weakest player with? And that's what I find so fascinating about this one, mm-hmm. because they're going in pairs, because they're escalating obstacles, and it gets harder and harder the further into it you go. But like you said, oh, you thought that Maddie and Ace would be compared, because there's even a confessional earlier in that episode where Maddie says, Ace and I are the two strongest people on this tribe for challenges. Right. But we kind of see it spread out a little. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of the strategy that goes into Jungle Relay.
For sure.
A challenge that doesn't seem like it should have much strategy to it. It's just like, mm-hmm. okay, who can go over these obstacles the fastest? But you can see the difference in the way that the Fong tribe and the Kota tribe approach this challenge.
Yeah.
And how it... Was it negligible as to which strategy worked better? Yes. But Fong gets off to a good start, falls behind a little bit, mm-hmm. and then is able to catch up and is right there to win this challenge.
Yeah.
But they suck at putting a fight puzzle together. Like the easiest puzzle we've ever seen on Survivor. It was literally three pieces. But
it was six. But
it's okay, fine. It was six.
Yeah. And you know, we have so many iterations of Jungle Relay. Where in Marquesas it is the infamous you didn't get it back to your post from with the boat with
your flag in before everyone was here.
Exactly. So the Jungle Relay actually does have a bunch of, you know, big moments mm-hmm. in Survivor, but it also is very similar to a different challenge, which is Chief's Choice, which is in the premiere of Samoa and in Ghost Island, where one person has to decide, all right, you few people have to do this task. And it's similar to 50, where it's like, all right, once you complete your task, the next person goes and the next person goes. But you don't know who can do what yet, because you're just... It's day one. You haven't met anybody. You haven't even been to your beach yet. Like, this is the marooning challenge. And here in 50, everybody knows strengths, weaknesses. I can't, you know, swim, so I have to do something on land, but I'm not going to be good at heavy lifting. So maybe I do the locks, or I, you know, do the coconuts or something like that. So knowing everybody's strengths and weaknesses is also interesting to watch in juxtaposition of Chief's Choice.
Chief's Choice is so interesting because it's okay, here's your chiefs, your elected chiefs, which who were Russell Swan
and Mick, and then Dom and Chris.
Yeah. And then you have to pick people who are
Chris and Brendan.
Yeah. And then you have to pick people based on just like categories. Who's your, I don't even remember exactly what Jeff says. He says, who's your strongest? Who's your, but he says it fastest, swimmer, strongest,
agile,
something like that. Yeah.
It's like best swimmer, strongman, agile, and knows the, and smartest.
Yeah. And there's an awkward part in Samoa where just like the choices are being made and everyone kind of questions the Jason pick for swimmer. And then it turns out Jason's a water, like professional water polo player. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that's like, how did you happen to luck into this?
And then Shambo gets picked for the puzzle and she's like, I got a lot of life experience,
yeah.
but not, you know, puzzle smarts. I'll be good at camp, but you know, I'll do my best here with this puzzle.
And I think it's so fascinating because this is such a great challenge to open. McKenna, at the beginning of this season, we talked about how we love Quest for Fire as a starting challenge. Mm-hmm. I also, there are some bad things about Samoa. There's some bad things about Samoa, but Chief's Choice is so fun to watch, but I don't think it works on returning player seasons.
I think it does and it doesn't. Like, I would like, you would assume, yes, we're putting Christian on the puzzle or whatever, but there are certain parts of this opening Quest for Fire where I don't know where I would put Kyle, where I would put Coach, where I would put Joe. Do I? Because they do the swimming and the paddling, but they're also good at throwing, and there was a throwing mm-hmm. element to this. So like there is some discrepancies of where you would actually put certain people.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just more fun when it's like based on first impressions, figure out who's going to do this, and you have to wear the burden of good or bad choices.
Mm-hmm. All right, Outlast this week. We are going to talk majority tribe. All right, there's a way to phrase this. In the swap, you swap in the majority, but you go home. There you go. and so we see this here in Charlie going home, and it's happened a few times in Survivor, obviously. It happens three times just in Millennials versus Gen X.
Three consecutive times.
Yeah, which is wild. But it all has to do with someone doing something to disrupt that majority. And I think here with Charlie, he was just so focused on his one idea that he had a little bit of blinders to what was going on around him, where in some of the other examples, it might have been maybe some more social dynamics or something like that. I think this was a strategic faltering.
Yeah, okay, Charlie's edit does him a bit dirty because there's no way the only thing he's talking about is going right after Rizzo for voting out his number one, or not voting for his number one at Final mm-hmm. Tribal Council. That was clearly just, you know, Charlie getting the TV moment and stuff. And then unfortunately the producers just dug onto it and like glommed right onto it. And then editors were like, ah, this is Charlie's story because you go home in episode 5. Mm-hmm. But so like, that feels bad. But I think there are other aspects to this as well. Part of this, it's really hard to determine in a returning player season because like pre-gaming is a thing we kind of have to acknowledge. And
right,
it sucks that the show still isn't acknowledging it. And I know what you're thinking, like, how can there be a pregame here when it's like Charlie versus Rizzo? Well, Rizzo's closest ally lives in the same city as Dee and knew her before going out and playing Survivor. So is there a possibility that Rizzo and Dee were told, hey, you guys should work together in the 9 days between season 49 and 50? Yeah, probably. Is it tantamount to the exact same amount of pre-gaming that some of these other players had? No. Not these ones who had known for the last 2 years they were in consideration for this season.
Mm-hmm.
However, like, that could be a contributing factor to it. It could also be, hey, maybe Camilla just doesn't want to work with a bunch of honor integrity bros again.
Yeah. I mean, when it like got put to these sides and Camilla in the middle, she definitely has more of a voice with mm-hmm. Rizzo, Dee, Suri, and herself.
Yes.
I was like, wait, I'm missing someone. She definitely has more of a voice on that side of things than she would with Jonathan, who's a more dominant personality, Devins, who's this huge character, and Charlie. Charlie, I think, would be a really good ally for Camilla, but he was just so focused on this one thing. Now, maybe if she had gone on with Charlie, they could form something because he'd be a bit more open and be open to more ideas and things like that. But I think just aligning herself with that side and sticking to that side had a bit more negatives than it did for going with Dee and Rizzo and everything.
I think there's just like too little attention given to Camilla in this position because I don't know if it's just because like 48 just finished airing before they went out for 50 or whatnot. Mm-hmm. It just felt like there was no thought to the several times Camilla says in the finale, man, she wishes she could have played a strategic game and not a loyal game.
Yeah.
But it seemed to be lost. And it's hard to balance that. But also, Charlie's in a position where he thinks he has this majority with mm-hmm. himself, Jonathan, like,
he has the Carlos plus Devins.
Yeah, right. And he's having conversations with Devins, like, okay, who of these two in the bottom do you want to go? Like, it's very obvious we can get rid of these two. You can be the fifth in this group. Mm-hmm. The fact that Devins was going along with that in the first place seems surprising because it's not a great position. I guess there's still one more person to get out, so it's kind of okay at that point. Mm-hmm. Or you think like a swap's coming up.
Right.
But,
or a merge.
Or a merge, apparently. But it is one of those situations where it's like, okay, what's going to happen here? Like, how is this going to work? What's going on? How are we doing this? I just think Charlie ended up on the wrong side of this group in the Kalos. And I think it's very important that it's the Kalos who are breaking up at this point because mm-hmm. they hadn't been to a tribal council yet.
Yeah. That also forces people to go home when they have the majority because they just go stir crazy of we need to, you know, strategize and focus and do all the things we need to do. But in the case for millennials versus Gen X with the Figgy boot, mm-hmm. Figgy had gone to a few tribal councils and it wasn't necessarily the stir craziness, but it was socially, her relationship with Taylor was starting to become a problem, and Adam felt like he needed to separate himself from them, make sure he's not aligned with, you know, just the millennials. He can reach out and do some different alliances, and also these people weren't his main alliance either. Like, he got swapped onto a beach with some people that he might connect better with than he did with Figgy and Taylor.
And that's really what it comes down to. When we're looking at this specific category and this specific topic, we're talking about post-swap. And we've seen so many times in Survivor how you swap can be very beneficial for you or mm-hmm. very detrimental to you. It could be as good as, I'm trying to think of a good example.
Comma?
Sure, comma. It could be like the comma one, right? Vlad the Impaler, thank you for the
super chat.
Stairway to Dementors. I'm not exactly sure what you were referring to there, but thank you very much.
He gave us the two, or he, they.
They gave us the 199 and we take it, run with
to,
it?
To scare away the Dementors, because they're coming. If they were, they were going to come and get us, if they,
super chat. But I'm thinking more of these, like, unfortunate circumstances. Like, we talk about swap screws all the time, right? Like Survivor China, probably one of the worst swaps in history. But definitively the worst swap in history.
I mean, just talk about the best season of the 30s, Edge of Extinction, with Lesu yeah. and Kama. Manu yeah, exactly. had that middle ground there, but Kama was riding off to the sunset. Lesu was not.
And then you get in Millennials versus Gen X, you have a situation where you have a majority on every single one of these tribes, and they mm-hmm. vote out the person in the majority. And sure, it's a very fortunate for Figgy and Taylor that they swap into a majority together on a small tribe.
Adam, and
but they swap with Adam, and they had been kind of pushing Adam away the entire pre-swap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think one of the biggest things, we've talked about this before, so we're just going to sprinkle it in. One of the biggest blindsides of the majority is Natalia, mm-hmm. because that leaves them in a deficit because Carl comes back into the scene after being on exile. So getting rid of Natalia here when you have the numbers to then lose the numbers is not a great situation easy either.
Mm-hmm. And Ground Scarecrow is asking about Malcolm, or is that more of a twist screw? technically, I mean, Malcolm swaps onto that tribe, and he's the only member of his original tribe on it.
Like an absorption. So we talked about that, of like Denise, because Calabao goes to so many tribal councils, but because she just got absorbed into that, it's like on the fence. Like, yes, we see where you're going, and I also went there, but it's not quite the same.
I think this one's specifically referring to Game Changers Malcolm, though.
Oh, that Malcolm.
Right? Where Malcolm is swapped as the one person from his original tribe.
Right.
But then goes out in that weird double tribal council.
That was a twist screw, yeah.
That was a twist screw more than a swap screw. However, when we look at like the Natalia boot, right? Like, that is one that's still baffling to this day. And yeah, it works out for Alec. It worked out really well for Alec. Well, it kind of worked out for Alec, but worked out for, you know, in the short-term games, and like arguably could have been very good for him, because I don't think Natalia was a good ally for him in the long run. But it was a dangerous gambit, because that's not just conceding your majority to have even numbers. That was conceding your majority to have a minority afterwards.
Yeah, which is even crazier. And then we also have like the Bradley boot, where Bradley was rubbing some people the wrong way in some of the challenges and in camp. And so that just tipped people off to go more towards him to appease other numbers. So Donathan really had, you know, the biggest gripe with Bradley, and then Dom to maybe scoop up Donathan, and Bradley wasn't, you know, necessarily his number one in the game either. So why don't I offer up Bradley to gain Donathan?
I think Bradley's the most interesting situation, because Navidi Strong is such a through line when we talk about Ghost Island, right? And obviously Kyle and I talked about Ghost Island 2 weeks ago. And this idea of Navidi Strong is so prevalent. And at this swap, Navidi has the majority in every single tribe. But because of that, this, I think, does kind of play into this idea of, okay, we haven't really had a chance to vote out a Navidi. And it's not because of lack of going to tribal councils. It's because everyone's been doing this Navidi Strong thing the entire time.
Yeah.
So when it comes to Bradley, it feels much more strategic than Adam breaking up Figgy and Taylor. Like, Adam breaking up Figgy and Taylor is strategic, but for a different reason. Right. Whereas this, like you said, is Dom bringing in another ally, and an ally that ends up being incredibly valuable to him throughout the game.
Yeah, exactly. So that has been our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments of the week. Just as a reminder, season 17 Gabon episode 5, "He's a snake, but he's my snake," is what we are watching over on the Patreon. So tune in over there. We'd love to have you. John, what's going on in the Specialist Universe?
So much. Phil and Will recapped the episode on Wednesday. They broke it down. Will pretty much predicted what we're assuming is happening next week based on the preview. So give that a good listen to. Wake and Phil were joined by Jake Kane yesterday for Digging Deeper, which is, it's always great to listen to Jake. Keeping that 45 streak going, Caleb is joining Phil for the power rankings on Sunday. Tegwith has Eric Reichenbach for Map Chat this week, which should be a great conversation. Phil's being joined by Mike Bloom for the predictions early on Tuesday. I believe it's happening Tuesday morning. The recap next week will be Blake and Will.
Because Phil will be at
the Ron Clark event. Phil will be there for Digging Deeper, though, with Bryce Isaiah joining. And then
McKenna, you forgot, Australian John.
Survivor.
Yeah.
On Thursday. It'll be me. It'll be me and McKenna doing Australian Survivor. I'm really excited to talk about Redemption. I've been enjoying this season quite a lot. So I'm really excited to be able to dive into it with McKenna. And it won't be as long as some of our old Patreon Australian Survivor coverage.
I hope, because we are not sitting here for an hour and a half. I'm just going to end the stream at 45 minutes max.
And then McKenna will also be back here to rewind the largest merge in Survivor history next week, We'll see how we actually decide to approach it, but I guarantee you we're probably not watching a merge episode next week. We'll probably save that for the week after. And then become a patron. We'll be talking Gabon tomorrow. Every Season Matters has just gone on to Worlds Apart, which Phil insists is a better season than people remember. So I don't know if that's true or not. I just watched
it semi-recently.
I think that might just be a, hey, remember when the podcast started during this season? But go listen to that. We have all those other shows over there. We got Tech Talk. We have Casting Perspective and all those other things that we put out on the Patreon. Lots of content over there. So make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, and we will see you next week.
Goodbye.